Last book of the Bible. Has 65 books in front of it. That we have yet to cover. Page 303, Revelation chapter 13. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, Revelation 13. You all there?
Yes, sir.
I wonder why you clapped earlier. Could be a little presumptuous. John the Revelator speaking. I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns. Upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. The beast which I saw was like unto a leopard. His feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. Beast like a leopard. Feet Feet of a bear. Mouth is the mouth of a lion. And the dragon Dragon. Wait till I draw that old whore. I know what you were clapping about. The dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And seven heads. Ten crowns. We're on his head. There it is. Seven-headed beast. For those that can't figure out things for themselves. Not going to be near as funny when he arrives in full power, but let's continue. Beast. Oh. See. Let's get this picture down before I move on. Beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads, 10 horns. On his heads, 10 crowns. We getting it all?
Yes, sir.
Upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. Be sure and take a picture of this and we'll make prints. Feet like a leopard. Saw this beast was like a leopard. Feet as the feet of a bear. Mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. And I saw one of his heads. I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. After the beast. And they worshiped the dragon. Clap, clap. And they were, no, wait a minute. That's what that is. And they worshiped the dragon, which gave power to the beast. And they worshiped the beast. They worship the beast, saying, "Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given to him to continue 42 months. 42 months. You could just move him into his sphere for 42 months. That's 3.5 years. Numbers in the Bible mean possession. Now, we're having fun with this because I'd like to graphically fix the elements in your mind. But this is the time of Antichrist, the beast that will rule is Antichrist. He will have the head of a lion, or the mouth that speaks is a lion. Get those elements fixed in your mind. Feet of a bear and like a leopard. What does that bring to memory? And yeah, I'm leading up to the great harlot of the book of Revelation, which is what you thought. If I don't get there today, I'll get her. And when I draw her, it will be something you'll want to keep. I've been waiting to draw her for a long time. Now, as I get back on the book of Revelation and leap with 70-league boots to try to catch us up where we left off, and it dawns on me, lots of things were well on their way when we took the side trip downtown. I had determined to preach verse by verse through the book of Revelation. But before you can preach verse by verse through the book of Revelation, you need to gestalt the whole prophetic flow that consummates in this book, and you need to get the broad frame of what is being communicated in this book. Then you won't make the errors that a lot of people make who study the book of Revelation piecemeal. We were about to the point where we could go verse by verse. Then I had to play coach and whip the troops into acting in faith, which is inspired by, if it's taught properly, the prophetic record of God's book. There is nothing that can inspire faith more than the demonstration in God's book of God's absolute control over history. I really don't know today. I started my faith from a study of the resurrection. But I honestly could not tell you today which is the stronger contributor. I know what started it, and I know what the proper starting point is. If Christ be not risen from the dead, our faith is vain. We're false witnesses of God. And I've made that clear every year for 12 years, that that's your starting point of faith. But then once enough faith has been engendered to spend the time with God's book, it begins to overwhelm you. As you see from different sources, different voices under inspiration, God revealed his prophetic plan for the whole world. Now, before I can get to this woman that, if we move ahead to the 17th chapter, comes riding on this beast, we got to get the beast clear. Because she's this scarlet woman. Riding on that beast is the subject we're heading toward. Got that? So you know what we're going toward. Now, when the next Truth magazine comes out, out of all the preaching that's been done on the book of Revelation and following the statement, it's time for a new beginning, and that's not what you'll see in today's truth, but those who listen on television better get on the mailing list so we can send it to you. Today's truth has on its cover the painting of the man on the white horse, but it is the Next Truth magazine, which I'm just now proofing, that for the first time lays down a synopsis of the whole book of Revelation, sunset of world history, an outline for Revelation. Can't hardly wait to get it in your hands so that you can carry this with you as we teach on the book of Revelation. And it also includes not only the... See, not many pictures in this one. This is all heavy book of Revelation outline. Map's better than a picture. And then at the same time, there is a message, Revelation, identifying the Antichrist, with a synopsis of the book of Daniel. Probably as a brief foundation for the preaching that we'll be doing on the book of Revelation, this is the most valuable truth you will get. Not out yet. Now, I had hoped that before I pass from the scene, we can give away 7 million of those truth magazines a month. What makes it so ridiculous that we have to fight our budget problem is that the anticipated mailing on this is 135,000. And we're still having to work to find 7,000 armor bearers. What does that prove about the parable of the sower? Some have it and some don't, and some can get it and some can't. Now, that little brief remark was from the coach up here, parenthetically thrown in, because I am determined to return to the book of Revelation, and I've given you enough between the halves, locker room coaches' speeches for the last several weeks. The ones that got it are going to respond. Those that don't, won't. So let's get on with the book of Revelation. It may intrigue a few other people and some new recruits, and will prove the wisdom to you that have responded of your choice as we look at God's control on history. Now, these beast symbols are not by accident. The book of Daniel also outlines beasts. It starts out with an image: head, breasts and shoulders. Thought I matriculated that one real smooth. Breasts and shoulders, sides and thighs. This is gold, silver, sides of brass, legs, iron, feet and toes, iron, clay. You say, I can't follow that. Well, yes, you did. What you're saying is, I can't figure it out after you've written it down. You followed it. Now, 70-league boots are necessary today, so hang tight with me. Otherwise, we'll be another year preaching up to this point. Isn't it nice to feel like, I know all this? That feel good to you?
Yes, sir.
I mean, you've learned something. Then, from the image, we turn to beasts. This is very intelligible if you get it as I put it on. You got to have three-dimensional vision. And every so often, you stand mentally over at the side of the blackboard and say, this was layer one. the beast, analogous to the head of gold in Nebuchadnezzar's image, is the lion. Analogous to the shoulders and arms of silver is a bear that rises up higher on one side than the other. Analogous to the sides of brass, belly and sides of brass, is leopard. And analogous to the legs of iron is a beast that's called non-descript beast, because they don't really know how to identify it. Though later apocryphal literature, a book of Ezra not included in our King James, identifies that miserable nondescript beast. And instead of 10 toes of iron and clay mixed, you have 10 horns. You following that?
Yes, sir.
Isn't it wonderful to know all that?
Yes, sir.
You could almost do this. Then the prophecy scope zooms in, right? And zooms in on a little territory or a little section of the image and the beast. And some have said in that passage of the beast in the book of Daniel that it can't, the first beast cannot be, namely the lion, Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, because he's already dead and gone at the time the vision comes. A mistake that comes from the King James without understanding of the meaning of the word, another kingdom shall arise. Because the word being translated, another kingdom shall arise, literally means another kingdom or a kingdom shall get up to leave. You can get up to do a lot of things. But there is a precise word being used in this prophecy of Daniel concerning kingdoms when they reach that point where they get up to leave. And the Babylonian Empire had not yet gotten up to leave the stage of history and its dominance. So the lion was yet to get up to leave the stage of history, as the bear would rise, and then the leopard, then the nondescript beast, then comes the horn kingdom, equivalent to the ten-toed kingdom. Prophecy then narrows in two areas. And those two areas are again described as beasts, with a ram and a goat. And the ram and the goat are equivalent to the ram, the shoulders of silver and arms, the goat, the sides of brass, the ram, the equivalent to the bear, the goat, to the equivalent of the leopard. And again, a notable horn grows out of the goat, broken off, replaced by four horns. And a little horn is shown as coming up in the last days, uprooting three of these ten horns. And in this picture of the same kingdom symbolized as a beast goat, the notable horn is broken off, four horns replace it, and out of one of the four grows the little horn. Now, in the process of prophecy, as it moves along, details are added until when you reach this point, the little horn growing out of the four, being an outgrowth of one of these four which replaced the broken notable horn of the goat, gives specifics that go beyond simply saying one of the ten horns uproots, or one comes along, not of the ten, a little horn comes along, arises, and uproots three of these ten. Now, where does that take us? The angel interprets in one case, and because the process of prophecy had brought us to a point of the kingdom of the ram, the details in each of these prophecies let us know a series of simple things. The lion is Babylon, so the head of gold and the lion are Babylon. The shoulders of silver and the bear are the Medo-Persian Empire, which take the place of Babylon, and the ram is the Medo-Persian Empire in the focused, narrow prophecy. The leopard, the brass of the sides of the image, and the leopard are equivalent to the goat with the notable horn. The notable horn is Alexander the Great, broken off in his prime, replaced by a division of the kingdom, making up four sections to the leadership of his generals who rule in his place but not in his power, the Bible specifically says. The ten-toed kingdom, the ten-horned kingdom, and the time of the little horn, the prophecies of Daniel all make clear these things occur at the time of the end. So we know that from the iron-legged kingdom, the nondescript beast kingdom that stamped and stomped on everything in its path, we have the time of the end, and the little horn that grows out of one of the four horns, which are symbols of power, that replace the notable horn on the ram, or rather the goat that conquered the ram, we have it made clear in those prophecies we're at the time of the end. We then introduce for you, if you'll remember, the gap theory. Do you realize how much we're covering? And I've been 30 minutes all total so far this morning, not quite 30, 26 to be exact. Isn't it nice to know all this?
Yes, sir.
How many of you have learned anything about these details since you started attending here or listening here? Let me see your hand. I didn't say everything, I said anything. You owe me. Second. Second little coach speech. Thrown in. Now, the gap theory, there are two theories that we introduce. One is the law of double fulfillment and the tendency of prophecy to sort of move through a perspective as time goes on. If you're looking from over here at a mountain range, they tend to blend together when you are far enough distance away. As you get closer, you begin to distinguish the foothills from the further ranges. And way back here, it looked like one mass. You didn't see the distance, which is the valley between. The closer you get, the more you see that these two peak points, though looking as one from this distance, as you get closer, you begin to see the differentiation, and that's what prophecy does. It also has a tendency, because God likes to make a point as time goes on and he's in control of history, he makes prophecy tend to fulfill itself partially in types as it rolls along toward the ultimate fulfillment that the prophetic picture is embracing. Now, the gap theory. Jesus steps into the temple and begins to read from Isaiah. He stops. You can find the place in Isaiah that he was reading. And one of the things I dislike about the King James is they don't quote it. They ought to quote in the New Testament passage an exact translation of the passage he was reading from out of the Septuagint. Because he was reading from the Septuagint translation of the Old Testament into Greek, done by 70 scholars, and thus its name, Septuagint, prior to Christ's coming, and that was the Bible in use, just as much in vogue for the area of Palestine where Jesus and his disciples ministered as the King James is in vogue among fundamentalists in America today. When he read from a Bible, unless specified differently, he was going to be reading Septuagint version. And we would be much better off if when they quote in the King James, and that's the major fault that I see in the King James, above all other faults, because they knew that, that the Septuagint was the Bible used by the New Testament, translated into Greek, and read in the synagogue, unless there's evidence he didn't read from that particular translation, they ought to quote it exact. Because he's reading from Isaiah, and if you read Isaiah and then read the King James New Testament quotes, they're not one and the same. He ought to have quotes in the New Testament, and it ought to read exactly as the passage being quoted in the Old Testament. If you read that, you'll find he stops in mid-sentence. Come to deliver and break chains of bondage, set captives free. Mid-sentence, which in the Old Testament record is a conjunction. And he stops and says, this day, this is fulfilled before your eyes. Had he read two words further, he wouldn't have been able to say, this day is this prophecy fulfilled. Because the conjunction then moves to a time of vengeance and wrath poured out by God on mankind. He stands there and says concerning the good part, come to set the captives free, deliver them that are bound. This is fulfilled. He couldn't say the second half of the sentence, this is fulfilled. And it still hasn't been. Anybody reading that passage in Isaiah knows that what Jesus claimed to be fulfilled, which was the first half of the sentence he was quoting, was fulfilled, and that to this day, 1980s, the second half of the sentence hasn't been fulfilled. He stopped and makes it clear by his stop that the prophet Isaiah, way back here in antiquity, saw the two mountain peaks, the one being the first half of the sentence, and the second being the second half of the sentence, without seeing the valley in between. And Jesus, coming along years later, can read from Isaiah the first half of his sentence and say it's fulfilled, but can't read the second half of his sentence because at least a 1900-year valley lies in between. So in Christ is the theory for the gap, or Christ is the basis for the gap theory. I warn you. That is the clue to understanding how you move from the nondescript beast, which is obviously the Roman Empire, from the legs of iron and brass, which is obviously the Roman Empire, and from the goat with the notable horn broke off and the four horns which are his generals replacing him and the little horn that grows out of it, which is the same little horn that uproots some of the ten horn kingdom. And we get, how do we get from Rome and from here to the present? And it's written in the Old Testament as though it's one continuous flow, just like Isaiah, from peak to peak, without noting the valleys in between. You apply the gap theory, and you know that somewhere between the demise of this Roman Empire, the legs of iron, somewhere between the demise of the nondescript beast with ten horns on his head and the little horn that rises up and uproots some, somewhere between the breaking off of the notable horn of the goat and the four horns that replace him, and the growth of the little horn out of one of these, there is a gap that places the years in between since the downfall of the Roman Empire, the legs of iron, the nondescript beast, and the breakdown of Alexander the Great's great kingdom. you know there's a gap. Well, we pursued that and found explanation also in the prophecy to Israel, where the angel comes to Daniel when he's praying, and Daniel is praying that God will keep the promise given to Jeremiah that they will only be in bondage to this lion kingdom and golden-headed kingdom, Babylon, for 70 years. And the angel comes and says, not only will I answer that promise, and you will be set free after the 70 years, I'm going to give you a prophecy of 70 weeks of years. And as I'm now confirming to you that what I said through the mouth of Jeremiah, that the bondage would only be 70 years, and I'm now going to confirm it, and will prove it on the stream of history, let that give you faith to believe that the next prophecy I'm going to give you will be carried out equally with faithfulness as the 70-year prophecy from Jeremiah. Now, Daniel getting the answer to Jeremiah's prophecy of 70 years gets 70 weeks of years, or 490 years. And God says, in that 490 years, in the book of Daniel, he is going to accomplish a series of things that he enumerates on your people, the Jew, and your city, Jerusalem. And that puts the perimeters on the prophecy of what God is going to accomplish in the 490-year period. Then he breaks it into three parts: a period for rebuilding the city, and a period until Messiah, who will come, is cut off, and then 1 week, the 70th week, with remainder things to be done. And by a lot of preaching that I can't do today to prove it, buy the tapes if you want it, the gap between the 69th week and the 70th week is this gap where God turns from the Jew, grafts a wild olive branch, which is the church, onto the faith tree of Abraham. And during this interim, sometime called the church age, he deals with this wild olive branch, and with the cutoff of Messiah, everything waits God's set time to start a finish of the prophecy of what he would do in 70 weeks of time, and what is called the 70th week of Daniel, which will correspond to the period of the little horn arising, the little horn taking power, and the beast that we've now come to in the book of Revelation. And when that 70th week begins, an event will trigger it off, which is the catching away of the church, symbolized in 4:1 of Revelation, with John caught up into the heavenlies, removing the church, which is the body of Christ, that's not appointed under wrath, that has stepped under the covering of his atonement, and believe that the wrath of God against sin was poured out on him. We therefore will not, as the body of Christ, suffer wrath again, and we are removed that the great tribulation might begin, which is the wrath of God poured out on this earth. Now, tribulation will always be a part of living on this earth. Tribulum is God's method of producing tridness. But when we come to the book of Revelation, the word is always very precise. The tribulation referred to in the book of Revelation is called the tribulation, the great tribulation. Instead of it being tribulum from the devil and his angels and the world, and the rain falling on the just and the unjust alike, God will pour out his wrath. That wrath will begin to unleash as the seven seals are opened. The seven trumpets announce greater woes that are coming on this earth. And the seven vials will pour out God's attack on sin and his wrath on Satan and this world, that he might prepare it for the ultimate cleansing that he will do. It's God's wrath. And since God's wrath fell on Christ at Calvary, we who have moved under the atonement, not appointed under wrath, must be removed. The catching away, which is called the rapture, removes us that the man of sin might be revealed, who rules the little horn kingdom that comes out of one of the four, who is the rules the little horn kingdom that upsets some of the ten-toed kingdom. And these ten toes and ten horns are at the time of the last days, when a stone not made with hands, the stone kingdom, will come and set up God's kingdom forevermore and usher in the millennium. So the gap takes us to the 70th week. And in that 70th week, this beast, you recognize him here? This beast will appear in new dimensions. And whereas we have seen him in history as a lion and a bear and a leopard and a nondescript beast, we will see him suddenly appear homogenizing elements of this entire kingdom, which has always had the characteristic of being ruled by the dragon, and his, the dragon's, instrument in time and history to oppose God's master plan of redemption of both this earth and mankind. Now that beast that we see in a linear form, lion, bear, leopard, nondescript, ten-horned, now we see in a gestalt, horizontal form, as existing, having attributes that combine its qualities through the ages. This one beast now has the mouth of a lion. When it speaks, it will have the message of Babylon, the ancient message of rebellion. Nimrod, the first rebel who built that city, and whose false religions we will talk about throughout the month of December, as once again we attack the traditions of Christmas that destroy the meaning that the birth of Christ ought to have. I don't mind the party. I want to make clear you understand I'm not one of those fanatics that tells you you shouldn't get a Christmas tree. Just don't lie about it. And in God's name, don't climb its branches and sing carols. I mean, I think it is important that Christianity be educated enough to not set its children up to have their faith destroyed. Jeremiah mocked them. He said, go out and cut the tree and put a platform under it and deck it with silver and bow down to it. Yea, it can't talk. It can't speak. Until modern evangelists make it sing. And that's why I say don't climb the branches. Now this beast has the quality of carrying forward the message that originated at Babylon.
This is the end of...